Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Dynamo's Half Dozen, here with myself, Ted, and my co-host, Ian, the Dynamo Kelly, who has been allowed back to podcasting after he brought out the better half for a nice meal. It's about time he did. Cheapskate. He's been spending all his money on podcasting equipment. She wasn't happy.
Yeah, you're not too far wrong there either.
No, I'm not.
Wish is a hell of a drug, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, catches us all.
Wish is just, oh my God, yeah. I got some, like, these basketball jerseys. I've had good luck with Wish, actually, over the course of this virus, because they're always telling you, like, there's lots of bad stuff, and it seems like my mother and everyone else in my family keeps getting this shit every time they try and buy it.
That's what it is. It's pot luck, isn't it? Sometimes
it is.
Like, you'll get a lucky streak, and then you'll go and you'll be like, oh, buy this for somebody. And it'll come in and be absolute shit, and you're like, right, well, that's not good.
You know what it is, though? It's been a smart consumer as well. It's, if you have a, like, if you get something from someone once, and it's kind of generally what you buy, and stick with the same people.
Yeah, and don't go because, oh, it's cheaper with this other lad. You don't know what that's going to be. Like, stick with the other person.
That's when you start
a couple of quid.
Exactly. That's when you start messing about then, and you're kind of like, oh shit, what's going on here? So you need to, my advice to all these e-commerce online shoppers, eBay is pretty cool. I mean, eBay is expensive regardless, but like if you have a good relationship with someone, you'll be grand. But I know people are always complaining, how come you always get good stuff? I'm like, well, because I go back to the same people,
people over and over and over.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is, I bought a basketball jersey off Wish, and it was literally, looks like they shredded it on themselves. And I was like, well, you know, you paid 14 bucks. What do you expect? You know what I mean?
Also, I think one of the biggest things is people never read they only read the first set of reviews.
That's it. Yeah.
Right? The first ones are always good reviews, good reviews, no matter what. You need to scroll down a little bit and read the 3-star reviews, read the 2-star reviews, see what they say. 1-stars are usually people that are just moaning about, like, anything that they can moan about. Even if the product is perfect, I'd be like, oh, I ordered a medium, but like, it didn't fit. Yeah, well, that's your fault. So that's not a 1-star review. Like, that's, you ordered something that was too small for you. Like, that's your fault.
Yeah, that's up to you. You can't be, yeah.
But plus, you read the 2 and 3-star reviews, that's where people tell you, like, I ordered it, this was good, but like, oh, I ordered this jersey, it was good, but like, after 2 or 3 washes, the lettering on the jersey started coming off. That's when you need to read those ones, because that's the ones where you find out the real problems. Because the 5-star ones are usually just their mates.
Yeah, it's like you always see these like things popping up. You know, like if you're into collectibles or anything like that. You know, if you know, the obviously the algorithm, even on Facebook and all, they know what you like. You know, and they were recommending these basketball kind of figures to me. Like the really kind of good ones that would be like the Koi Arts type stuff or like NECA, and they look really cool. They look shit cool, but I was like, this is way too cheap. It was a big Michael Jordan set. Like, these are a good like 9-10 inch figure. Like, so these are, you know what I mean? They're
yeah. You see, where are they coming from though?
Yeah, because if you're getting them on eBay, you're going to be paying $300 easy. Like, so
yeah, but if they're coming from China, so China doesn't have any China doesn't have any copyright laws. So what they're able to do is China will buy one figure of that and they'll create their own mold of it. And they can make as many copies of that as they want. And because they don't have that copyright law, they can't get done for it.
Well, plus most of NECA's stuff is made in Taiwan and China anyway. So
that's what I mean.
Another side of it as well is that, you know, people always think that they're getting sold fakes. It's not always fakes. A lot of times they are legitimate NECA made toys. However, They're not shop quality. Do you know what I mean? So there might be a problem. There might be a fault in the arm, or you know, something. You know they put the wrong suit on something. So they're able to then sell this stuff on Wish. So a lot of times you're getting it legitimately. But the key is, guys, be smart, do your research, and also remember you're buying from China. These crazy motherfuckers, don't give a shit. They will sell whatever the hell, you know.
Oh, yeah. Sell it to, if the person sends it back, fuck them. And no one's going to send it back because it takes 14 weeks for it to get back there anyway.
So they sold it. They sold us the virus about 3 months ago, and look what's going on. So they're crazy bastards, but very, very effective, to be fair. And yeah. They have stuff that's worth getting. I highly recommend it.
Oh, but, yeah.
On to today's show, Ted. We have a bit of an agenda today.
Yeah, we're going to discuss with the return of the NHL this coming week. Well, they've returned already with practice games, but
scrimmages, they return
they return next week, the bank holiday weekend. August bank holiday weekend is the return of proper NHL competitive games.
Yep.
So with that in mind, we've decided to have a look at who most would consider the greatest of all time in the NHL or in ice hockey in general. I think there's only a very select few who don't consider him the greatest of all time, himself being one. But Wayne Gretzky, he doesn't believe himself to be the greatest of all time. I was watching an interview with him earlier today where someone was talking to him about it, and they were saying, like, you're considered the greatest. How do you feel? That's on your shoulders. And he said, oh, I'm not the greatest. Definitely not. And I can't remember who he said he thought was the greatest. But he definitely doesn't think he's the greatest. That's for sure.
Did he mention someone like Jaromir Jagr or something like that, possibly?
He does mention them, but that's not exactly who he said. I can't remember who he thinks is the greatest of all time now. But I'll look it up here. Who did he say he thought was the...
It's interesting because, again, we're going to get into the story of Gretzky, and it's kind of like two. And I think the reason we did that was because, you know, we need a campaign to, you know, Michael Jordan has brought basketball back to a lot of people that either watched it casually as a youngster or maybe didn't even know anything about basketball in general, but they knew who Michael Jordan was. And yeah. I think what's happened now is you kind of look at it and you kind of say, right, Netflix are going to do this kind of ongoing thing where they're looking at you know, top sportsmen in their sports. I'm looking at Bleacher Report here, and they've got it all wrong. They've actually also got they've also got Wayne Gretzky as the number two of all time. We've got Gordon Howe as number one.
Well, that's because who Wayne Gretzky considers. Yeah,
but if you look at, I mean, we can kind of debunk that in a lot of ways, because he did play the most games in the NHL, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm.
He played for a longer period of time. So this is kind of, you're getting into that territory now where you'll get the LeBron fans saying that, oh, well, you know, he's got more this or he's got more that than Michael Jordan. But it's not, you know, if you have a longer career. Yeah, it's exactly. If you have a longer career, if you're doing it season by season, number by number, and the impact that someone had on a game, that's really what it boils down to.
I think even now, if you look at all-time records for, like, the Bulls, if you look at their all-time top scorer and most points in a season and stuff like that, that's all Jordan. I think if you go and look at that for LeBron and any team he's been at, he does tend to be the all-time scorer, but his points do tend to always still be lower than Jordan's overall.
Exactly.
And I think that's where the argument is, like, which one was better, like, and do you get, that's where the argument is, I suppose, do you get someone like LeBron without Jordan?
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? Because since Jordan has retired, obviously, you know, the media are always going to look for the next whoever. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I remember in the 90s, you know, every Chinese martial artist that brought out a film was the next Bruce Lee. And I heard, like, you know, back in the day, you know, Jackie Chan was going to be the next Bruce Lee, or this guy was going to be the next. Like, there is only one.
And as you say that, Jackie Chan, his idol was Bruce Lee.
Exactly.
And he still thinks Bruce Lee's the greatest, even though now some would consider maybe Jackie Chan to be definitely more famous, I would say. Jackie Chan's probably more famous than Bruce Lee now.
Well, I mean, I don't even know about that. I think maybe in terms of he's a higher profile of films, but you ask anyone in the world, they know who Bruce Lee is. You know what I mean?
Just yeah, but I think, but Jackie Chan kind of broadened out as well, is what I mean. You know, he went into, he didn't just stick to combat films. You know, he was in.
Oh yeah. Nobody
was more well known because not everybody expanded.
Yeah, exactly. Not everybody thinks of just as Jackie Chan as a martial artist. They just think of
an
actor who does martial arts. Whereas you think of martial artists, the first person you're going to say is Bruce Lee.
Bruce Lee. I mean? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, Gordie Howe is that's who Gretzky still considers to be the greatest hockey player of all time. He still refuses to this day to say that he's the greatest.
That just shows you his humbleness. Gordie Howe.
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. Every time, any interview I've ever watched with him, he seems very, very humble. Which is why we were discussing just before we came on whether they were going to do a documentary on someone like Gretzky, the way they did with as they did with Jordan for Chicago Bulls. And I like Jordan has that bit of like ego about him, whereas Gretzky doesn't seem to have that. So I don't know if Gretzky would be interested in having it made about him.
Yeah, so I mean, it's we'll start off. You know, some people might not be interested in this, and we're making the campaign and talking about why Gretzky is one of the greatest sportsmen of all time. Period. Mm-hmm. You know, in any sport, when we look at it, you know, for anybody that's not familiar with hockey, you know, there's goals and there's assists, much like in football over here, except you wouldn't be just judged on the amount of goals that you have, you know, individually or assists that you have. You know, individual at the end of a season, you're judged on the total points. So you're getting a point for each goal, a point for each assist, and they're tallied up into a total at the end. So it wouldn't be top scorer just of goals, it'd be top scorer of both. And so if you look at the records for Gretzky, he's basically set records in both regular season and post-play season. Holds the record for most career regular goals, which is 894, which is just incredible.
A regular goal is no power play for anyone who doesn't know. A power play is when a foul is committed and you lose a member of your team for 2 minutes if it's a minor foul and 5 minutes for a major foul.
Yeah.
So these are goals when it's 5-on-5 or similar to football, 11-on-11. But then if someone gets sent off and you score, that's not considered a regular goal. It's considered a power play.
And it's the same with, like, they have the regular season, and much like, you know, much like the football and NBA, they have, you know, they don't tally up all the points from the regular season and the playoff goals or assists either. That's separate.
That's done separately, yeah.
Yeah. So this is just on the regular season and obviously post play. He's got 894 regular season goals, which is just incredible. Assists 1,963, so that's a total points of 2,857, just under 3,000. And 50.
And if you look at how many games he played, if you look at how many games he played as well, in comparison to scoring 2,800 or so points, the number of games Wayne Gretzky has played in the NHL is 1,400 ish. So yeah, he has nearly double. So that's a goal and an assist per game, or two goals or two assists, whatever way. He has made 2 points every game. Now that's on average. Like certain games, he may only make 1 point, and then another game he could make five.
But it's on average.
Averaging out nearly double. Like people talk about the likes of Messi and Ronaldo having, you know, X amount of goals in X amount of games. Essentially, what Wayne Gretzky has done here is he's got two. Every game,
at least,
it's an unbelievable record. And as you said, he has 894, is it?
Yeah, goals. Yeah,
I think the next highest behind him is somewhere in the 600s. I don't think anyone's even close to him.
No, nobody is close. It's a record that looks like it could never be beaten.
Talk about a certain player that could beat him over the next few years, but I think he has to score 34 goals in regular season for the next 7 seasons.
So,
and that's goals, not points. So not just like assists won't count to him. He'll have to score 34 goals for seven years.
And that's like, you know, if there's a player out there that's like that, I mean, Yeah, it's very difficult to. I mean, you can look at Connor McDavid, who's, you know, pretty much a young man playing for the Oilers as well. You know, same team that Gretzky started out in. Yeah. I know Gretzky's a big advocate of Connor McDavid.
Big fan.
Similar players in a lot of ways. Connor McDavid too seems to have a bit of a head on his shoulders. He's only 22, 23, but if you look at the 2018-19 season, he had 116 points in total, 108 the year before, 100 the year before, and 48 in his first season. So he's definitely on the right trajectory. But these are 82 game seasons, and again, he needs to be basically getting nearly 160 a year.
He will, yeah, because especially since for four seasons with in the NHL, Gretzky scored over 200 points.
Exactly.
For four separate seasons, like that is, and then one of the seasons he scored like 198, so he's just shy. I mean, and as you said, some people might not really watch ice hockey or things like that, so they might understand that. Over the last 5 years. If you take all of the people to have scored over 100 points, none of them have come close to 200.
Nobody.
But over the last 5 years, 12 people have scored over 100 points.
Yeah.
And Wayne Gretzky did that for 13 years in a row. And some of those, he was scoring over 200. And other ones, it's 160, 120. Like, this guy's points per season are just off the charts.
And this was at a time as well. People might say, oh, well, it was probably easier to score goals or points back then. Not at all. I mean, this is at a time when, you know, it was actually, you know, people think of hockey fighting and it's still allowed today. It was a lot rougher back then. In fact, it's a lot more regulated now compared to what it was back then. So
it is. And I was actually, as I was saying, I was watching that interview earlier, and I remember they asked Wayne Gretzky, you know, do you think you could score as many nowadays? And he said it was definitely, like, in a way it was easier to score back then because the defenders weren't as good. Defenders now are better, he said.
Yeah.
But he said also at the same time, the rules have changed so that cross-checking, high stick, tripping and stuff, they get called a lot quicker now than back when he played. So he said that although defenders and goalies are more difficult to beat now, the attacker is given more leeway. So whereas Gretzky might have gotten tripped up a lot more and not got any penalties or anything given away against him, that wouldn't be the case now. So he says he doesn't know if he'd score as many. I think he would score as many because,
yeah, me too.
Even if the defenders now are better, most of them are going to be in the penalty box playing against this guy. Like, if anyone's never seen him play, just go and watch even just a best of. You can see how good he is on the skates, how good he is at shifting the puck around, sitting the player in front of him down. Like, it's just, you don't see it. Like, even now in the NHL, you just don't see that happening.
Yeah, like, they used to have a thing. He had a trick, obviously, when he used to go behind the net, and they always call it Gretzky's office. They still call it Gretzky's office today because he'd go behind the goalkeeper's net. And obviously, anybody that's watched hockey sees the amount of gear and padding that a goalie wears in the NHL. So he'd confuse the shit out of goalies, go behind, waiting for a foul or whatever. He'd deke them, which deking is like, you know, nutmegging someone in football terms or doing a trick on them to get past them. Decoy. And basically he'd go around and just slide it in under the goalie. No bothers. It was just an incredible...
And the goals are tiny in comparison to something like football. Like, these goals are... Like, the keeper covers pretty much the entire thing. Like, you have to be precise in ice hockey.
Yeah. For anybody out there that's ever tried to play an NHL game or something and tried to score a goal, they'll probably know that...
Yeah.
But we look at, let's go into Gretzky just a little bit, just to give people an idea, because I think we should be looking at a campaign. If we're going to be talking about greatest sports people of all time, Netflix should definitely be looking at doing a Gretzky one because...
I think so, yeah.
Without a shadow of a doubt. I mean, he's known pretty much worldwide. You ask anybody who Wayne Gretzky is, 9 out of 10 people will know the name. Do you know what I mean? They will know the name.
I mean, he's one of the only people that has his jersey number retired, not just in his team, but across the league. You are in ice hockey, you are not allowed, like in the NHL anyway, I don't know about the other leagues, but in the NHL, definitely, you cannot use the number 99 if you're a player. That number was retired. A team won't use it. A team will not use it. They know it's a retired number.
Exactly, yeah. And that's what I'm saying. You'd have to do that because whoever did try and wear it would just be...
Yeah, like 23 for the Chicago Bulls is retired.
Yeah.
That's Jordan's. But if you go and play for a different team, you can wear 23 if you want. That's not the way this is for Gretzky. Gretzky's number is retired. You cannot use it.
Yeah, like it's almost unheard of. It's actually unheard of. Yeah,
it's unbelievable. Like this is how much respect the guy has across the entire league to be considered.
If we look at it as well, it was a long career. It was 21 years. He played from 1978 till 1999. He played for the Indianapolis Racers initially, but then went to the Oilers. That was his big team. Obviously, that was a junior team, the Racers, and then went to the Oilers. Big controversial trade then to the Kings, where basically the Oilers owner kind of cashed in on an asset when pretty much his teammates didn't want him to go. The fans certainly didn't want him to go. I think things have been patched up since then. But
he had a great season as well. That's the season they traded him.
Amazing season, they traded
him off the back of a really good season.
You see, the owner got pocketed quite a lot of money out of that as well.
Oh, yeah.
For this selfish reason. If we look at, in terms of hockey players as well, we look at the size. I mean, you know, people always think of hockey, especially back then, thinking of hockey players being beasts. He was a big enough guy. He was 6 foot tall, which is, you know, it's not the shortest in the world. But he's only like 185 pounds, which, you know, for, you know, in kg for, you know, people in Europe, 84 kilos, 13 stone, which, you know, I'm pretty much nearly 13 stone now and I'm 5'10". So, I mean, he was a big enough guy, but like in terms of playing hockey back then, when you had guys paid just to be enforcers.
The enforcer who literally just went through you.
Just went to kill you. Crazy. Went from the Kings then to the St. Louis Blues and then finished his career at the New York Rangers. Big career.
Yeah, big career, long career. And as you said, it spanned over 21 years. In only 7 of those years, and most of them his latter years, did he not break 100 point seasons. And like one or two of those seasons, I think he played like 30 games or something in the regular season.
Yeah.
It was only in his very last season that he didn't match his games to points. Every other season before that, he always had at least 1 point per game until his last season.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Like, that means that the guy, okay, you have to get at least a goal or an assist every game to do that. And if you don't get one in one game, you need to get two in the next. Like, that's a monster stat. Like, can you imagine a footballer having a stat like that, or anyone? In basketball, maybe it's probably a little bit...
Yeah, well, that's different, though. But, I mean, even in basketball, like when when we look at someone like MJ, for example, people don't just look at MJ also because of the points and the baskets that he scored. It's also to do with the fact that he absolutely, like, was one of the best defensive men as well. Because don't forget, he was a point guard.
Yeah,
it wasn't like he was a short forward or a power forward like LeBron or something like that. And you can see LeBron wants so badly to be the best, and he's trying to work on. He was always decent defensively, but he's trying to get his defensive side. Mm. That's what they try and say to the young lads. But like MJ just had it all, and that's exactly what it was with Gretzky. And I think we could talk about some of his off ice stuff as well. We mentioned there that, you know, he's known for being humble. I mean, there's literally he's one of these guys that it's very hard to find any flaws in. I mean, obviously he's a human being, so of course he has flaws. But in terms of how he presents himself on and off the ice, he's never had any major controversies, you know, family man.
Mm.
Just an out and out, like in my opinion, for sure would be one of my top
He seems to be an absolute saint. Like,
yeah.
Normally you hear people say, oh, you know, you should never meet your heroes. But, like, for nearly anyone that's played hockey, like, anyone that plays ice hockey at that level, like, up those, up, like, the NHL level, like, this guy's got to be a hero to nearly every one of them. And I've never heard anyone come out and say, I wasn't really happy when I got to meet this guy. Like, it seems like, oh, don't meet your heroes doesn't apply to Gretzky, because everyone seems happy to have met him. He's willing to sit there and talk hockey with them, and just, you know, he's, as you said, he's a family man. So when he sees someone with their kids, he definitely, like, he stops and says hi to the kids and stuff like that. He's just, he just seems like one of the most genuine, down-to-earth people as well. And, like, that's hard to say for somebody who's considered the absolute greatest in their field. Like,
yeah, it's crazy. And like I say, he's without that, like, and, you know, like I said, for anybody that doesn't, you know, fully understand the world of hockey, like I said, just look at just look up a YouTube kind of videos of Gretzky in terms of what he did on the ice, because anybody, if you're into sports in general, you know when something looks good, even if you don't understand what's happening, but you know that you're trying to control the tiniest puck that's, you know, not much bigger than a sixpence, really, and control it, something so small, with a stick while ice skating. Well, and
having some lad try batter you.
Yeah, trying to avoid some lad absolutely clattering you into a Perspex hoarding. So it's an unreal sport. It's the fastest sport in the world, toughest sport in the world, without a shadow of a doubt. No matter what anybody says, you know, I know you'll probably try and get some rugby players and all these people. No, it doesn't compare. There's a reason these guys have to wear a certain pattern. Even to this day, it's
but I mean, they're all wearing gum shields and helmets and stuff. And, like, even now, most of them are still missing, like, most of their teeth.
Yeah, well, that's it. Like, if a puck goes into your face, forget about it.
But I mean, like, you look at the likes of the UFC or boxing, like, these lads are wearing gum shields as well. They're just wearing a gum shield. They're not wearing a helmet on their head. Yeah. How many cracked teeth and broken, like, missing teeth do you see in those big-time sports? And, like, those sports are literally about getting punched and kicked in the head. And these guys, their teeth seem to be pretty okay. Whereas I don't think I've seen an active NHL player that doesn't have a chipped tooth at the very least. And he's wearing a big helmet over his gum shield as well.
Well, you see, most of them now, it's just the visors that they have. So that's why they wear the gum shield. Sure, back in the day, they didn't even wear helmets.
Oh, yeah, but that's what I mean. Even now, like, where they are extra protective of their own mouth and stuff, still most of them are missing teeth. Like, it just shows you how, like, oh, yeah, he's wearing all this padding. But, like, that's how hard-hitting it is that, like...
Yeah, it's crazy. It's as I said, I think with Gretzky as well, without a shadow of a doubt, there's a definite conversation that needs to be held in terms of who goes down as some of the greatest sports people of all time. Over on this side of the world, you probably don't hear his name mentioned as much, just purely because hockey wouldn't be the biggest thing, I suppose, in Ireland and all. It is in Scandinavia, obviously.
Yeah, but over here, yeah, it's not as big a sport.
In the UK, yeah, it's not as big. But Scandinavia, Russia, they all have their own leagues now as well, and they're big leagues too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's a lot more money in the European game now than there was, you know, 10, 15 years ago. Jaromir Jagr is actually still playing, believe it or not, over in Scandinavia.
Yeah, that's... I don't know how he's still going.
Oh, he's crazy. Like, his last stint in the NHL was actually with my team, with the Calgary Flames. So he went back to Finland then, I think. He went to Finland first, I think it was, yeah. So it's crazy. And, you know, when we look at these kind of, when we rank these kind of sports people, we're taking into account the effect that they had on their said sport. We're taking into account the effect that they had on young people trying to get into the sport and just being a good role model in general. What they kind of stood for, what they've been, you know, everything. So that's why names like Michael Jordan, some people might say Jordan came across as cocky or whatever. But look, I think that's mostly people that have never played sports, to be honest with you.
I think the thing is, though, that like Jordan, like Jordan definitely does come across as cocky and arrogant, right?
But rightly so.
He has a reason to be, like,
the
NBA was, it was popular in the States, but the NBA wasn't really a thing in like this country or in England or in Europe. Like it wasn't that big. But no. Then Jordan takes off and like the NBA becomes this franchise.
Yeah.
Where it's stretched out from out of America. Like, of course he was a bit cocky and a bit arrogant. Like this guy, most of the, like an entire league nearly rested on his shoulders, and he was the driving force for making it this popular. And then you look at a guy like Mike Tyson, obviously in boxing, like, again, polarizing figure. Some people might not like him, but there's no denying that, like, in terms of boxing, who's one of the biggest draws in boxing ever? And that's Mike Tyson. Then you look at golf, Tiger Woods, again, like sports that, you know, even if you know nothing about them,
you know who these people are.
These names mean something. Like, you could never have watched a game of basketball in your life, but you know who Michael Jordan is.
It's like Muhammad Ali, you know, you mentioned who
Muhammad exactly.
is to anybody. It's worldwide, they're known. And again, for out of the ring stuff too, you know what I mean? So it's definitely, I think, a name, Wayne Gretzky, has to be in that conversation, because he's actually one of the people that you kind of would want to model yourself on if you're a young athlete. Humble, not arrogant. Arrogant on the pit, on the ice. Is good. Let's just think about it like that, right? So for a 21-year career, you're starting in 1979, playing through all the 80s and 90s, where, like I say, some players didn't wear helmets. They got absolutely smashed up. And I mean, you look at Wayne Gretzky, there's no broken noses or anything like that. He still looks great.
It was weird, because even though he's the, like, at the time, he's the player you're targeting. You know, you need to get this player. And, ice hockey's a bit different to football. You can't just target someone. Like, you can't just go, we're going to shut down Ronaldo, or we're going to shut down Messi, and the rest of the team is useless without him. Like, that's not how it works in ice hockey. You can't just focus Gretzky. But, like, here is a player that you are going to focus when he's out on the ice. You're going to go to make sure he doesn't get these points.
Yeah.
But yet, because of how good he was at skating and how good he was at reading the game, very rarely did he ever get hit hard enough to take him out of a game. Like,
I think I've only ever seen him once react. I mean, I'm sure there were many times, but I've only ever seen him once react angrily to somebody, and he wouldn't let it go, and he just kept poking him with a stick, and it was the only time. And he still didn't throw the gloves down. He was just letting him know, listen, motherfucker, you done something wrong there. It's like, I always like to say, you know, we talk about generations and stuff and what player would have done. It's like Messi now. People go, oh, he's the greatest of all time. He's better than Maradona. Listen, for anyone that's watched Maradona, put Messi in that generation where you were getting the legs kicked off you and lads actually kicking you, physically kicking you, you know, in the head, or, you know, elbowing you in the face constantly, and then do what Maradona done. And then,
that's what I mean,
will always be made.
That's what I mean. Like, Gretzky made the same argument. He says he doesn't know if he'd score that many now.
Yeah.
And he doesn't know if he'd have scored it in the past, because he says in the past, you know, stick checking and stuff like that was called even less. So that would have hurt his game. But if he comes forward to net,
he would have scored them now.
That's what he says, you know.
Maybe 198 or something rather than 200, but.
But like he says that you bring him forward now, the defenders are better athletes. They're better athletes now. They know how to skate better. They know how to shoot better. Everything is better about them. But there's more leeway given to an offensive player.
You know what I always like to say to these arguments as well? People always like to take this player from time and put them in the modern era because everything now is better than then. Well, if you do take that player from time and put him in the modern era, then he too is also going to be better because he's going to be benefiting of the new sports structure. So, in fact, he might have scored more points then, because with that mindset and that actual natural ability, natural skill level, getting the nutrition that the modern athlete has, and you know, getting the tactical analysis that the modern athlete had, then a lot of these athletes would probably do better now than they did then. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because it's very hard to judge.
People expect this caveman to kind of be brought, you know, oh, we take you from 1984, we now put you in 2020. You know, talking to them like they're some sort of dinosaur and doesn't understand how things work. Put them in that environment, which they're naturally the best at anyway. Mm. And of course they're going to destroy. It's like Michael Jordan. I love this argument. Michael Jordan, if he was in NBA now, would be killing it. Destroying.
Yeah.
Destroying. There wouldn't even be a conversation as to who the best player in the world is if he was playing still with LeBron, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'd agree with, especially on the likes of Jordan there. But like, I think that's the point, that you can take someone from 20, 30, 40 years ago and go, well, they're better than this player now. But are they? And is the player now better than the player was back then? The game evolves. It changes so much that, you know, like even, you know, you were saying Maradona got the legs kicked off him, but like Maradona was kicking legs out of people as well. Like, say Roy Keane, like Roy Keane's, you know, only out of the game 20 years or whatever, but like you put Roy Keane into a midfield now, half the tackles him and Vieira putting on each other would have seen them both get a red card every week.
It's true, yeah. Exactly. So like, look, they're fun conversations for people to kind of play, you know, generations and stuff like that. And they're interesting conversations, but can't really compare, you know, it's like
comparing, the game evolves.
It's like comparing modern day boxing to boxing 20 years ago. It doesn't compare because, let's be fair, and you know I'm a massive, anyone that knows me knows I'm a massive boxing fan. None of the boxers, well, some of them, but a very, very select few would only last in the old era because of A, the smaller gloves. The conditioning was much better back then, which is very funny to say because you think, you know, these athletes look great, but they fight maybe once or twice a year. Whereas back then, they were fighting 5-6 times a year. Do you know what I mean?
You weren't making the money back then to only be able to do two fights a year. You had to.
Exactly. So boxing has actually devolved in that sense. Obviously, with the American. Now, it's starting to come back up again because you're getting some characters in there, like the Gypsy King.
Yeah.
Who's kind of, you know, fun. And a lot of them are, people are calling it the Conor McGregor model, but it's not. It's the Ric Flair model, which is exactly where Conor McGregor got his model from. Of being able to talk the talk. And plus, it was also Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, exactly. You
know, it was Gorgeous George started it all, and Muhammad Ali made it even more famous, and that's where they kind of got it from. You look at Ali and Frazier, you look at those fights, Ali and George Foreman. I mean, Ali rope-a-doped George Foreman, who people said when he hit you, it felt like a cinder block being swung at your arm, even on your arm when you were blocking.
Yeah.
He took that. In the heat,
yeah,
you know, in the jungle, and
this is why people talk about, you know, who's the best. Like, this is where one of the arguments could be made against someone like Gretzky being one of the biggest sports people in the world, because part of being a sports star and like drawing all the money to the sport you're watching,
yeah,
a lot of that is showmanship and stuff. And while Gretzky had that in spades when he was on the ice, getting off the ice, he didn't have that demeanor, which is something that Jordan did, and something that Muhammad Ali did, that, you know, like even Conor McGregor. Like, Conor McGregor sold fights because, like, he had the mouth, he had the gift of gab. And that's, you know, that's where one of the arguments can be made. Like, who is the, like, what makes someone the greatest sports star in their field, like in the sport they're in. Like, GSP is probably considered one of the best UFC fighters of all time, but like, no one's ever going to tell you that GSP was going to, you know, make the sales that someone like Conor McGregor is going to make, because he wasn't. He didn't talk that trash talk like the Diaz brothers do all the trash talking. And I remember Diaz versus GSP, and I was pumped for that fight back then. I think it was Nick. Nick versus GSP. And like, I was pumped because I was like, you've got the loud mouth in Nick, he'll sell you the fight. And then you've got GSP that, even if Nick was absolutely, and he wasn't brutal, but even if Nick was terrible in the fight, GSP was so good that he'd keep you entertained.
Yeah.
And that's where it is. You need one person bringing you in and one person keeping you there.
It also creates those talking points with the element of doubt, because I remember that fight too. And in the build-up, you're saying, right, well, the Diaz brothers are dangerous, but also they're gangsters. Like, you know, they're gangsta, or whatever you want to call it. Whatever the cool kids say now. They were gangsta, and like, you never knew what they were going to do. You were like, is this like going to flip out on GSP if he's getting frustrated, or could he be the one to catch GSP with a lucky punch? Is GSP going to stand on the feet on this one? So, I mean, it's all these talking points, and that's what's great. Sometimes, you know, with McGregor, it's the opposite. He was kind of on top for a while, so people wanted to pay to get him. You know, you'd both sides of the coin. You had people that loved him and didn't care whether he went out and shot fucking children in the head, they'd still support him, you know. But then you'd the other side of the fence that wanted to see him get his ass whooped. That's the Muhammad Ali syndrome. That's why Muhammad Ali was the biggest draw back in the day, and probably still one of the biggest of all time, because he talked so much trash that people wanted to see him get shut up, you know. And you look at it, this is at a time where Muhammad Ali was, you know, people were rooting against the black man, you know.
Yeah.
We can't have this black champion. And I mean, it started in the 30s and it went still all the way up in Muhammad Ali's career. But then I think something happened there. It's like, you know, in wrestling terms, where eventually the heel kind of just becomes cool after a while, and people kind of end up going, you know what? You've kind of been around a long time. I kind of like you, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
you know, and it's
you make like a grudging respect to them, sort of thing.
Yeah, it's like the Stone Cold syndrome. You know, it's like, you're a bad man, you do bad things, but you know what? You're cool.
And yeah,
you know, it's we can't help but like you. So it's it's a great conversation too, and it is it's one of those things, because you've got Tyson on the flip side of it, whereas Tyson, you know, wasn't the best talker, you know, but he was. He was just so dangerous and bad, and just battered people so badly that you look at Mike Tyson and you just go, danger, you know? Danger. Yeah.
Monster, so he was. And like, he's back in the ring now, back training, and he's still, I know he's, you know, obviously he doesn't look the way he did back then, but...
Well, he looks better than he did in his last few fights, and that's
the truth. He does, but I mean, like... You can tell that, you know, age isn't on his side here anymore. He's not going to be what he was back then. So people were talking about, like, oh, is he coming back to box in the heavyweight division to try and be the champion? And, like, no, he's not. Because he's not going to be able to come in and fight someone like the likes of the Gypsy King. And so he's not going to be able to come in. The years aren't on his side. Like, it'd be very tough for him to come in and to stick around for long enough with some of these guys.
I disagree in a lot of ways, and I'll tell you why. Because I was watching a couple of interviews with some guys like Bernard Hopkins and guys that, you know, veterans of the game.
Mm.
And if you look at a lot of these heavyweight fighters now, like Tyson is quite clearly on some EMT or whatever that shit that Joe Rogan's always going on about. Some performance enhancers, put it that way. But if you look at the rules of boxing, they can be stretched as well in terms of commissions allowing certain stuff too, you know.
Yeah.
Anyone that's looked at his training videos, I watched a 12-minute long training video with Tyson, and he was going...
Oh, he looks great. Like, don't get me wrong.
He was going for 12 minutes nonstop in the ring. Like, and he wasn't able to do that in his prime because he get gassed.
He looks great and everything, but just it's a risk that if you step in there with...
It's not a risk for him. It's a risk for any of these new boxers, because Tyson has nothing to lose. If he goes in and he knocks Josh, because we all know Joshua's got a suspect chin.
Mm.
He catches someone like an Anthony Joshua and knocks them out. Like, people are going, all right, here's this 50. He's only 51, going on 52. It's not the oldest. George Foreman was fighting up till then, was world champion, actually.
He was, yeah, but he wasn't out of the game either, you know.
No, I agree. Well, he was out of the game for a good while before he came back. A good 15 years, actually, so it was around the same. So it was actually out a good while. I could be wrong on the 15 years, but it was quite a while.
He was out for a while, but I don't think he was out as long as Tyson was out. Like,
but if we look at Tyson, right, he's not done that much damage to his body. You know what I mean? He wasn't going out. He wasn't.
Oh yeah.
He wasn't homeless on the streets and blah blah blah. He didn't take a whole lot of punishment over his career. Mainly dished it out. So, just think about it hypothetically for a minute and have a bit of fun with it. If he goes in and he tells someone like Deontay Wilder to put his money where his mouth is, because Deontay Wilder recently said that he was better than Tyson ever was. I mean, forget about the size difference. Yeah, like, forget about the size difference. Tyson was fighting lads who were 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", all of his career and knocking them out. Because he's a fighter who fights on the inside and wears you down and hits the body so that you eventually lean into him, and that's when he catches you. Yeah. If he just to humor me a little bit. I mean, if Tyson gets a good, I mean, we know he's going to fight Roy Jones Jr., who is my favorite, one of my favorite fighters of all time. That's going to be interesting. Roy Jones is a very smart fighter too. I mean, he could win that fight just purely on boxing kind of technique alone. Do you know what I mean?
On points, yeah.
On points, yeah, exactly. But he's got knockout power too.
He does, but I think against Tyson, you don't go in for a knockout.
No, exactly. You fight on the outside, exactly.
Yeah.
But if Tyson, say, wins that and he gets a little bit of confidence under his belt and he's training as fucking hard as he is, because he looks absolutely incredible. I mean, he went in against someone like a Deontay Wilder, a Fury, anybody. It's all on them, because the world expects them to win. And I mean, these guys aren't going to hurt Tyson that badly. Do you know what I mean? They might beat him. I mean, Lennox Lewis and Holyfield are another two guys that could easily make a comeback if they wanted, I think. I think
exhibition fights are the safest bet, though, for Tyson.
They are the safest, but the thing about it is, I mean, like I said, he's got no underlying medical conditions or whatever. He could go in and take a one-off fight and do a 10-rounder against you know, any of these top five, top six. And dude, there's guys in that top 10. I heard Oscar De La Hoya say there's guys in that top 10 rank that are shitting themselves and hoping that Tyson doesn't come back, because they'll take it for a payday, but it's all on them. Like, if you get beaten up, you get beaten up by the old Tyson. But at the same time, you're not going to be like, oh, look at that old man beating someone up, because he looks better than most of these people.
He does. Like, I don't want to take away from that from him, but like, I think if he was to have jumped back in straight away and said, like, I want to get in there with the top boys straight away.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I think
that would have been a mistake.
I see what you're saying. Yeah,
he needs to come in.
A couple of exhibition fights under his belt, like a preseason. And see how he feels after that,
because it's not just the fight itself. Like, you go in and you fight someone, like, say he goes in and he's like, I'll do an exhibition fight and I'll fight Anthony Joshua or whatever, right? And he goes in and fights Joshua. Like, you might be fine on the day, but, you know, there's a recovery thing as well. And that's where, like, you're 50, 51 going on 52. Your recovery isn't going to be as smooth as it was back then, you know?
That's where I think the old PhD is coming.
I think that's where you need to make sure in just these normal exhibition fights, like, go in, just have a little exhibition with someone around your own age and stuff like that, and see how you feel after it, like a week on after it. How are you feeling? Like, are you recovering properly, or is there a longing sort of injury there? You know,
it's gonna be interesting either way. It's a good
space. Oh yeah, I'm looking forward to it anyway, definitely. Like, it's one of the fights I'm looking forward to most. Like,
yeah, definitely it is. And I mean, like I said, Roy Jones Jr., one of the greatest of all time as well. So they picked that one out specifically for me to fuck with me, I think.
I'm Tyson all the way. Like, nothing against Roy Jones Jr., but
Roy Jones is my favorite. But it's kind of like one of those things where Roy Jones is doing it, you know, not for like a comeback or anything. So I'm kind of, if Tyson wins, I'm not gonna cry too badly, because it's like,
why I want Tyson to win so much, because if he wins, you get another one out of him.
But that's when the possibilities go, because if he goes in and destroys Roy Jones Jr., albeit Roy Jones is a lot older than Tyson now. I think he's 53 or 54. I think he's 3 years older than him. You know, so Roy Jones loses. Roy Jones doesn't mind. He's got paid. he's not chasing any titles or anything like that.
Oh yeah.
But like you said, if Tyson goes in and wins, and if he wins convincingly, then questions start getting asked, and then like we said, there might be some of that top 10 might go up to the top 5 that might start shaking in their boots a little bit and hoping that there's not some sort of comeback.
Yeah, well, as you said, the likes of Joshua has got a bit of a weak chin on him.
It's been shown, yeah.
Deontay Wilder talked about how, like going into his fight with Tyson Fury, he was talking about how he was going to knock Tyson Fury out and, you know, that Tyson Fury didn't have the hands on him to knock him down and stuff. And Fury showed, like, listen, Wilder, you're erratic. You're a big haymaker.
Broke his eardrum, didn't he?
Yeah, but like this was the argument against Wilder forever. Like, all he is a big haymaker, and like he'll hit you and he'll hit you hard and he'll put you down.
It's a hell of a haymaker, but
his technique is terrible, and like he's a bad.
Yeah,
and that's what Tyson Fury was going and saying. He's like, you're a bad boxer. Like you've got a big shot on you, but that's it. Like, you're a bad actual boxer. Like, you're not that good. And then Fury went in and he just schooled him, like, absolutely. And people were talking going into that, oh, sure, Fury is fighting these nobodies, and one of them caught him in the eye and cut his eye open. Fury went in and schooled Wilder. Like, yep. It wasn't even close, like.
Yeah, and I think, obviously...
And I'm glad he knocked him out as well, because it wasn't close, and I had a feeling that even though that wasn't close, had that gone to the judges, they'd still have given it to Wilder. So I was delighted to see him get knocked out.
Yeah, well, he kind of knew he needed to do that. So
I think so, yeah.
Kind of knew he needed to do that. And I think, obviously, we get to the trilogy, obviously, with Fury and...
I'm not even bothered at seeing that. Like,
well, I'll watch it just purely because...
But like, Fury won the first fight and he won the second fight. He won the first fight and he got robbed. Yeah. And then he actually, like, he made sure he won the second fight. And I don't see Wilder having it in him to stay with Fury in the third fight.
And then
it's
obviously
trilogy I'm interested in.
And then obviously depending on what Tyson does, there'll be we know that the deal is finally signed for Fury and AJ, probably the biggest British boxing.
Yeah, that's the one I want to see. Like, that's the fight I want to see.
I think AJ loses that badly as well.
Oh yeah, I think Fury's the best in that division by a long shot. Like,
yeah,
at the moment I don't think there's anyone close to him.
No. And I mean, you want to talk about a pay-per-view draw? There you go. Like, he's
the one as well.
He's the one. But look, as we kind of wind down a little bit, anything else lately that has needed to be brought to my attention? No,
I don't know. Just obviously the NHL and the NBA making their comeback. Neither really matter overly much to me. Both my teams knocked out too early. So
yeah,
both yours are still in though. So.
Who are you? You'll obviously be watching, I know that.
I'll probably just watch them all, to be honest. It's kind of like, you know, when Ireland don't make it into a World Cup, and you still just watch everything. Like, you don't really care anymore. You're just like, just watch them anyway.
Is there anybody that stands out that you'll be rooting for? Any teams or players? Or?
I don't really know, because part of me, you know, you want to see some of the bigger teams kind of take a hit so that they're... They might want to take our sixth round draft pick off us. So they might be willing to give up a player to get that sixth round draft pick. But then at the same time, you're like, they could get knocked out and then you don't get to see them in the bigger games as well, you know? So it's kind of there's no one that I'm like massively rooting for to get knocked out. And there's no one I'm like massively rooting for to win it either.
Well, if I put you on the spot, like, what are some of the teams that you're going to be hoping that might be winning both the NBA and NHL championships? The O'Brien and the Stanley Cup. The O'Brien, we may as well call it properly, yeah?
Yeah, I don't know, really. Is there anyone out there that's really dominant, though, like in the league? It's going to be weird as well, because it's a restart, so it's going to be similar to the football. Like, we don't know what we're going to get either. Obviously, I watch, like, you're a big Flames fan, so support them because a friend supports them. The Canucks as well, a friend of mine used to support
them. Good answer.
Like, they support, Canucks were highly supported by someone I was friends with as well, so be looking for them to do well. But Yeah, it's harder to get invested now with the season kind of broken off until it starts back. That's when I'll get back invested, I think.
Yeah,
it was the same with the Premier League. I couldn't get invested when I was just sitting there waiting. Like,
yeah, I've been watching all the scrimmages and the and obviously the, you know, from the Magic. The Magic had two very tough scrimmages. Well, yeah, two tough kind of exhibition games. They played the Clippers and then played the Lakers, but done very well against both, which was very, very surprising. Like, they didn't lose by a long shot. They had a couple of players injured as well. And the two of them have come back then against the Nuggets the other day. Markelle Fultz and Jonathan Isaac are back. So Magic, I think, have a good outside chance of getting into the playoffs and doing pretty decent there. Upsetting teams, put it that way.
Yeah. I think that's the best way to put it. Like, I don't think they're not considered to be.
No, they're not
there, you know, either. But
everyone's saying the Lakers are the Bucks. I still have a little punt, and I have to go down to my local bookmaker and see if I can put a tenner on €10 for all you American fans. $10, or so I don't want to say a tenner. They'll be like, "What's a tenner?" Other than a singer. I don't know. I have a sneaky suspicion that the Raptors could throw a little spanner in the works there as well. They are the defending champions. They're not.
They were kind of upset champions though as well, which is why.
Yeah, but they're still not shit either.
They are doing well, right? I think the Lakers are probably a pretty good shout overall, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Lakers look. They do look good. LeBron just looks.
Well, that's the thing. LeBron is a big game player. Like, you know, he looks
incredible as well. Like, he's
the Lakers are going to make the playoffs one way or the other, and it's once they're in the playoffs that's when you start looking at LeBron and you start seeing the best of LeBron sort of thing. You know?
Yeah, exactly. And LeBron is a, like, playoff LeBron is a different animal. Everyone's obviously talking about Giannis now. It's up to Giannis now to prove that he can do what he's doing in the regular season and bring that into the playoffs. But, I mean, LeBron is a different animal when the playoffs come. He's a dangerous man. I mean, tonight we also have an exhibition game tonight for anybody that is – well, I mean, when people listen to this, obviously you won't because we're recording this on the 28th. But for you, my friend Ted, if you wanted to – although you have an early start tomorrow, so it'll be different.
Yeah, early start tomorrow, so I won't be watching it tonight. I might watch it tomorrow after work.
Edmonton Oilers against my Calgary Flames. So
the Oilers aren't they're not bad actually at the moment.
Oilers
actually,
are great, man.
Yeah, they're actually
they have a good team. You see, no one is great. I mean, like, we look at Calgary at the start of the season, we're on fire. They were on top of that.
Yeah, exactly. And then
they had that whole controversy with the coach.
Yeah.
Sacked because of something he'd done 40 years ago or something.
Yeah, I don't know. Nobody
looks amazing. If you had to put a gun to my head, obviously I want the Flames to do it.
But
if you were saying, look, honestly, we want you to make some money for us here on this one, who would you pick? I'm thinking the Bruins look really good. The Bruins could possibly do it, or else the Sharks could do it as well.
I was going to say, I think the Bruins have looked quite good all season, but then...
Not the Bruins or the Sharks, sorry, the Lightning. Sorry, the Bruins and the Lightning look good.
Yeah.
Maple Leafs look good too, though, dude.
And that's the thing, and we don't know what's going to happen now when these come back, like when they start playing again.
That's it. That's exactly it. I mean, tonight I'm going to obviously watch the Flames and kind of get a feel for how the first... And see, the problem with the Flames this year is that they've had, obviously, Johnny Gaudreau, had a really off season this year. But he seems to have, from listening to the coach, Jeff Ward, he's the new coach that came in, but he's a wealth of experience. Like, he won a championship with the Bruins in 2011, albeit as an assistant manager, but he was still there. Still part of the team, exactly. And he's, you know, he's been in the system there in Calgary for a while, and he's got a wealth of experience. 58 years old, so he's, you know, he's taking a job
around.
He's taking it on an interim basis. So, you know, he's probably thinking, right, you know, I'd give a good, you know, even get a conference final out of this.
But the thing is, like, you don't need to particularly have a Like this is the this is how things are kind of different than football over here. Like you can win your conference, right? You could have, you could dominate and win your conference, right? And that's great. And everyone wants to, you know, win their conference and whatnot. But the thing that everyone really wants to win in the ice hockey is the Stanley Cup. That's the real, that's the creme de la creme.
Conference would be like maybe the FA Cup or something, wouldn't it? You know what I mean? It'd be like, I mean, in terms of, you know, if you don't win the Premier League, but if you get like, say, a top four finish and you get an FA Cup out of it, you're probably happy enough, yeah? But
yeah, it's a weird one because, like, obviously the Premier League, you know, you go in, you play the Premier League and you want to win.
Yeah.
And because that's like a huge thing. But the way like American sports kind of work is you have your conference.
The opposite, yeah.
It's like you have your conference, which is kind of like your league.
Yeah.
But it'd be similar to like the Premier League. So obviously top four get Champions League, right?
Yeah.
But if the Champions League was played after the league was played.
Which both of our teams did this year. I salute you.
They did. But like if the Champions League was played directly after the league was played, and like winning the league was kind of like, yeah, we won the league. The Champions League is what you really want to win. Like that's the only way I can think of it in football, like, because that's what the conference is. It's like a league, but you're only trying to do really well in the league so that you can do well enough to get into the Stanley Cup and then try and win that.
Exactly. That's exactly it. It kind of works in reverse almost. Like you win your league, you know, it's so strange because you've obviously got the Western Conference, the Eastern Conference in hockey, but then you've got this Pacific, you know, it's broken down into so many. So it's kind of like there's lots of different little trophies that you can win for certain stuff, for finishing in certain positions. So it's a little bit different. But look, it's fun to get into, though, for anyone.
I suppose in terms of like the Champions, it's like the group stages of the Champions League, but instead of only having four teams in your group, you have 10 teams in your group.
That's exactly.
And you play the whole thing, and then once you get into the final 16, it's in, obviously in football, it's just best of two.
Yeah.
But in hockey, it's best of seven.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you go in and you play best of seven. That gets you to the next round, best of seven, and then you get to the finals, which are best of seven as well.
Yeah.
But like it's very different to the system that like we're used to over here in football, but. Like you could do, like as you said, like the Flames did really well at the start, and then they kind of dropped off. But you're in a position where you can still get into the Stanley Cup now.
Exactly. So
having not done that well, it isn't going to matter because, as you said, like one of the players kind of had an off season because he wasn't getting on with the coach. But new coach in, right? Getting to the Stanley Cup, he starts playing well under that new coach, and you win the Stanley Cup. That's it, isn't it? Like, who cares that you didn't come first in the conference?
Onwards and upwards. It's like Michael Jordan said. Nobody remembers what you've done in the regular season if you win a Larry O'Brien Trophy. You know what I mean? And you're the MVP of that. You know, it's just the way it works. You know, big game players, and I think that's what it is. So I'll be watching tonight to see how the first forward line works. But then for us at the Flames, it's about the depth department then. You know, it's line three and line four. That's where we kind of struggle to score goals then as well. Pretty good defense there, but it's all about the depth also. And I think that's where other teams might we have enough power in the first two lines to do damage.
Mm.
But then you've got the likes of the Jets who would be playing in the playoffs.
And they get three and four out, and
yeah, they've got some depth there, but it's not like that they're completely more outstanding players or anything like that. They've just got more depth that can do a little bit more damage. The main problem for it seems like all my teams have a goalie issue. It's the same with the Flames.
Mm.
It's Chelsea. the goalie issue is a big problem right now. We have Riddick, who was at the start of the season was just on fire, probably one of the best goalies in the league. Then, for whatever reason, just something happened. And then we had Talbot come in, who was a second goalie. Like, he's mainly a second goalie.
Yeah.
And he's kind of done okay. So, it's going to be interesting to see in the off-season how this works now. there's part of me that's kind of saying, right, if we lose, then we get
a decent pick.
Get a decent pick, you know.
Which is, again, different to how football works. You know, if you get knocked out early, you get a better pick to try and make your chances better next season.
You boost your percentage ratio of getting higher in the draft pick. I mean, you can still get lucky. I mean, you could.
Oh, yeah.
You could get a 4% chance of getting a top three pick, and then the luck of the draw just happens to work in your favor. But, it's just going to be. See, I don't think Calgary are at that stage, say, where your team, the Ducks, are, where they need to be kind of worried about picks as such.
Yeah, see, the Ducks' big problem is, like, as you said, like, you were talking about defense. Like, our defense is actually quite good.
Yeah.
Like, we can absorb this pressure. Our problem is getting shots away. Like, we're always, like, 20 shots behind the opposing team. Now, you might lose 2-1, right? But they've had 40 shots and you've only had 10 or 12, you know?
Yeah.
And you're thinking, if we were having 40 shots, then we could have scored another one. But because we've taken, we're not clinical enough with the shots we do get, and we're decent at absorbing pressure. But if you continue to absorb pressure, you're eventually going to concede.
Yeah,
like, that's where our issue is. We need to sort out the shooters. That's where the Ducks are lacking at the moment.
Yeah, like, you look at the Ducks, they've had, like, obviously Gitzal is there still, and he's kind of getting a little bit older and stuff.
Exactly, he needs to, like, I'm not saying replace and get rid of, but,
no,
like,
but he needs to go down a line, maybe.
You need somebody else to take his starting position so that he can drop down a line, and that improves the second line or the third line, whichever he's,
and
well, if he drops the second, then whoever was in second drops the third, and it improves each line overall.
And that's where are so important then for the likes of the Anaheim Ducks then, because obviously if they get, I mean, there's Lefebvre, who was kind of the number one draft pick this year, he's a center. Lefebvre, I don't know, my French isn't great, so check him out. Lefebvre.
Yeah, we're not going to get near him anyway. But
he is, he's the guy.
He's first round pick, like he's...
he's top.
Yeah. We have sixth round pick. We're not getting, like, there's no way he's lasting that long. Like, he'll be well gone by then.
If he did, then someone was obviously on crystal meth.
Well, five people would need to be on something
special.
Even
goes to, if he even goes to pick number two, then there's something wrong. So,
yeah, exactly.
It's going to be good, though. There's some good Ukrainians and Russians in the pick this year as well. I think we'll do, I think closer to the time, we'll probably bring you on if you want onto the ASI podcast. We'll do a podcast on the picks, and we'll obviously do a little bit of a deep dive over the next few weeks and do a bit of research on both of our parts and see kind of, we'll do a bit of a mock draft maybe just for a bit of crack.
Is kind of harder because I don't really watch the college games, which you kind of need to if you're going to know the draft I haven't done it this season, and I hadn't done it previously, but I think I'm going to need to start doing it.
Well, for anyone that's out there, I did this yesterday. You can actually go on to your app store and you can actually download the WHL league app.
Oh yeah, you can, but the problem is that, like, you know, that season's kind of over now, so you can't see these players.
Yeah, so you can wait, but you can still go back on them, and they're all free now to watch the previous games. So you get little highlight packages and stuff, and they'll kind of give you a detail on who's been great. I mean, obviously, there's so many different leagues at junior level. Like, I mean, WHL is obviously where my interest in is, because obviously the Hitmen are there. The Calgary Hitmen would be who I'd kind of keep an eye on as well. But also within that WHL, you've got the top Canadian. Then you've got the OHL, then obviously you've got the QMHL, which is, you know, the Quebec side, and then, I mean, even the European leagues now as well. So I think it's more a case of kind of looking. American sports is a lot, but you can tell it's not like soccer, where sometimes you need to watch the player to see what they do, and that their statistics can kind of tell lies a little bit, if you get me. Whereas with American sports, stats tell you everything you need to know.
Pretty much.
It's like Football Manager or something. You can be like, right, I've never seen this player play, but judging by his stats, he's a left-sided player. You know, he produces at this time, you know, his minute per goal ratio, his checking. It's all very, very stat-orientated. And that's why, people make huge money in the United States by just predicting games and stuff like that, because they don't even need to know the player. They just know
their stats.
Exactly, and that's why they're different. That's why they're completely different games. You know what I mean? But that's generally what I would recommend. And then when I see someone with shit hot stats like LaFavio, I'm like, oh, shit,
you gotta look them up.
I gotta check this kid out. And then you check him out, and you're like, all right, whoever gets him next year is gonna be a hell of a lot better. So
you just have to hope that the Oilers don't get him.
Shit, yeah.
Imagine McDavid and him up there, like.
Well, I mean, well, one of them's well, obviously LaFavio would have to go to the second line, but
But imagine that, like, you think you're getting a bit of a respite because McDavid's come off, and then here we go again.
But not even that, dude. Not even that. They also have Leon Draisaitl as well.
Like, exactly, and he'd probably jump down to third, like. But like, so you'd think finally a rest after those two. Nope.
Well, like, even at that, I don't even know whether he'd be dropping down to third. Like, Leon Draisaitl himself got 105 points last season as well. So I mean,
yeah, he did. Yeah, he's
so LaFaviore then goes, spends his first season,
maybe his third, possibly.
Then that just fucks shit up for everybody. Then, you know what I mean? So, we need to get a campaign going and get the Flames to first round pick. We need that to happen.
Well, I think the Ducks need the first round pick more than you guys, but. Everyone would love to have it.
Nothing to offer in return. That's the problem.
Yeah, everyone would love to have the first round pick, to be honest, nearly every year.
Yeah,
but Jordan, I think, was a third round pick.
Well, Jordan should have been a first round pick, but for whatever reason, they were acting the bollocks, the first two teams, and trying to be tactical. And
yeah, exactly.
And then obviously, the Bulls spotted this.
This young man, yeah.
Very minor error.
But that's what I mean. Like, getting the first round pick doesn't always mean you're going to be, you're going to get the best player. Like, it should.
Oh, but, for sure, man. For sure.
Like, but sometimes a team might need it. Like, there could be a fantastic forward out there, but your team is just so desperately in need of a good goalie that you'll use that first round pick to take a goalie.
You have to. That's the thing. I mean, if you're a Calgary Flames and you've got your front three, which is obviously Goodrow, Monahan, and then Lindholm, and you know that that's your first round three, and then in the second line you've got your Tkachuk, who's the top scorer as well on line two, Backlund as well.
But you need a keeper.
Yeah, like if you've got like LaFaviore there, but you've got like pretty decent centers in there, but yeah, you need a keeper, and you know that. You know that there's a number 10 pick there, but he's got the potential to be the best goalkeeper.
Yeah, you have to take that risk. Like,
well, you are, because what's happening is there's a rule that they always say in hockey as well that you should never spend your cap money on a free agent goalkeeper. You know,
yeah.
And I think that makes sense because a goalkeeper can be traded. You can always, I mean, goalkeepers in hockey. I'm not saying that, Jesus, they're two a penny. I'm not saying that. But you'll always get a decent keeper in a trade, especially someone that's getting on a bit. That might be 35, 36, and you know, look, if we get him just to fill the void for 2 years, in 2 years' time, we've got such and such who's going to be a free agent or, you know, or whatever, just to kind of fill the void. It's such a tactical thing. But look, Ted, we've had a good one tonight. We went a little bit overtime. Sure, look, that's okay.
Ah, sure.
But we will definitely do that. We will come back to this closer to the time. We'll obviously come back to it. We'll be touching on it as well over the next few weeks once the games are up and running.
Yeah.
You'll be on the – we'll bring you on the ASI podcast as well. We'll shoot the shit as well about it. And, so I think we're going to be back next week. I think we said we're going to finally do the book show. So we're going to be going to be talking about some of the books that we've that we would recommend. I know it sounds very boring to a lot of people straight away. What, they're going to talk about books? But no, trust me, we're going to go through some books.
Yeah, we're not going to be talking about what happens in them. We're not, like, you know, we're not reading them or anything.
Yeah, we're not going to be talking about the day-to-day life of a librarian or anything like that.
Yeah, just in general, like, these are the ones, this is the top, like, this is the genre we'd be interested in. And
exactly
if you're looking to read something in that genre, here's some that might be similar to something that you might have read, or something that you may never have even thought of reading.
Exactly. You know, you may never have thought that you'd be into Game of Thrones, and then you watched the show and went, shit, I wouldn't be into, you know, fantasy or anything like that. And then you go and read
the book. You watch something like that.
Yeah. You watch something like that and you go, you always get someone and says, yeah, you should read the books. And you're like, oh shit, yeah, I should actually read the books because now I'm familiar with the characters. So yeah, that's kind of what the kind of agenda of next week's show will be. And yeah, we'll be back more regular on that. Ted had a great show the other day on his own. He went solo, so we commend him on that. But this is Ted is the host, and I'm just in it by name. So, but sure, look, Ted, we will come back to this next week, obviously. And I guess for me, as usual, Dynamo over now.
Yeah, good luck.